Ryan Rashog, TSN bureau reporter, joins us. Shogger, we're going to get to the orders in a second, but we got to talk CFL every day when the commissioner is coming down with some decisions that we've never seen before. So he says in one hand that the Eskimos did no tampering. There's nothing wrong. They are clear of tampering. However, Noel Thorpe's resignation, it's invalid. Evidently, he didn't write it himself. I don't know what that means. I don't understand it. Basically, I know what he's saying was, well, it's got to go through Montreal. They've got to give permission. Basically, I don't know if they're compensation or what have you. They're trying to save face on this one. But ultimately, Noel Thorpe's not going to be in Montreal. There's no chance he's going to be in an organization that he said he didn't want to be with.
Now, you said they said he didn't write it himself?
No, I was joking. Like, how else can it be invalid? Like, you know?
Yeah, no, it's supposed to be, I mean, he sent a letter, an email to the president of the team saying, I resign. I'm not sure why that resignation would be invalid. I think more what he means is that he's not free to move on to another club as though he never had a contract to begin with. I think that that's kind of what the ruling more means, and so he's still essentially property, the Alouettes, and that any team that wants to talk to him needs to get permission. So, I mean, my expectation is that Ed Hervey will ask permission from the Montreal Alouettes to speak with him, and I'm not sure what Jim Popp is going to do. I'm not sure what that'll look like, but Ed is, I mean, the simple fact is, if Ed wants to hire this guy, he's going to have to find a way to make a promotion out of it and elevate him in some way, shape, or form, because it doesn't sound like a lateral move is going to be able to happen.
Yeah, so that I don't know what they'll do on that one, but if the guy resigns, he resigns, right? Like, I'm not sure what they can do on that one. And
But the thing is that, so what happens if, Taylor Hall resigns from the Oilers tomorrow?
Those contracts are different.
Well, but they're kind, I mean, I'm not going to pretend to know all the contract law between the two, but what the commissioner is saying is they're not. So they have contracts, and they have signed contracts for their services, and if they just resign and walk away and go work for someone else, they could very well be in breach of contract.
Okay.
The Alouettes would have the right to sue over breach of contract. I'm not saying they'd win, they'd lose, or whatever. I ain't a lawyer. But when you have somebody under contract for 2 years and they walk across the street and work for the competition, I think you're probably on pretty good footing to sue. So the proper protocol needs to be adhered to, and that's permission needs to be asked, it needs to be granted, and then they move on. And I agree with you. I don't know how he possibly goes back there. And the writing's been on the wall for Noel Thorpe there for a little while. I mean, they've passed him over 3 times for the head coaching job, and I think the relationship is soured there, so I'm not sure why they would want to keep him hanging around. Now, what would not surprise me is if Pop is a little maybe sour about the way this whole thing played out and starts trying to grind the Eskimos for compensation.
Yeah, well, we'll see. There is, I don't know what's going to happen. Like, what's real compensation going to be? Like, you're not going to get a first rounder. No chance.
Well, and any draft picks are tough, right? Because we all know how valuable Canadian talent is in the CFL. And so you make it hard for guys to be employable if the cost of employing them is you got to start giving up draft picks for something as important as Canadian talent. It's a really sticky situation. And so we'll see. I mean, really the ball's a little bit in the Alouettes court here. They can either be sticklers about this and try and stick it to Hervey or to Thorpe and not grant permission, or grant permission on the stipulation that all this compensation be paid, or they can say, hey, look, the relationship's gone bad. Yes, we've passed you over. Yes, we brought Cavis Reed in and elevated him to assistant head coach too. So, yeah, go ahead and move on. I mean, you could fairly ask the question, why didn't that just happen in the first place? Like, why didn't Ed just ask permission in the first place and see if they were ready to move on with them anyways?
That's a valid point. It's a very valid point. Let's move to the Edmonton Oilers. Yesterday, I thought it was an obvious one with Cam Talbot to go back to him. I know in the morning the guys are like, no, you got to go with Nilsson. I don't buy that at all. Nilsson proved that he could be a good goalie for 6 or 7 straight starts, which is great, but his last 3 starts were not very good at all.
Yeah, and I mean, I think they still have high hopes for Cam Talbot,
sure,
and maybe what he might be able to do. And so I think given the start that he just put up and the performance that he had, I think they would probably be remiss not to get back to him sooner rather than later. I mean, if he throws 47 saves out there and then they don't play him for 6 days or 8 days or whatever it ends up being, then maybe they've missed an opportunity to jump on a hot goaltender. And it's not like Nielsen's been winning and shooting the lights out. His play has dipped a little bit. The quality of goals that he's letting in has gone down a little bit. So why not throw Talbot in there, see if he can get some bounce off of that great performance. And if he does, now you're still riding a hot hand. Although, I don't know. We'll see what happens. I mean, it's Chicago. They've got lots of firepower. And if you're not on your game and not confident, they can make you look foolish.
Well, it's funny. The Hawks and the Oilers have scored the exact same amount of goals this year. The difference being the Oilers have given up 18 more goals, right? And that's kind of the separation. But offensively, you know, the Oilers have the most goals in the Pacific Division. They're top 10 team in scoring in the NHL.
There's not many nights where they're outgunned, hey?
Yeah.
I mean, offensively, there's not many teams they come up against. Maybe that Dallas game, but not many nights where there you could say they're not going to be able to match up offensively.
Which is why tonight I could see an offensive explosion.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be. I mean, it's funny, when these two teams meet each other and you do pregame and you talk to each team, they both talk about how, oh, we can't get into a track meet against these guys. They both say that about each other. And then quite often it ends up being a track meet because they just can't. I mean, if you're the Chicago Blackhawks and you're looking at that Oiler D, you're like, yeah, we got to force the issue with these guys and be aggressive and try and create opportunity against his decor. A little tougher for the Oilers. They're facing a much better decor than the Chicago Blackhawks are tonight. So they're going to have to take some chances and maybe be a little bit more aggressive against a decor that's not going to give them a lot with a few guys that play a lot of minutes and are veteran world-class players. So the challenge is a little tougher for the Oiler forwards given who they're facing.
Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. Shogger, Bob McKenzie got Oiler fans all excited about mentioning, you know, Steven Stamkos and Edmonton.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was a very subtle mention at a point in his article where he was mentioning every team could be a possibility for Steven Stamkos, right? So I don't know if he was sitting there saying, these are what I think possible destinations are. I think the point of his article was throw out a team and give me a reason why Steven Stamkos wouldn't potentially be a fit there or why that team wouldn't be interested in that player, right? I think it was more meant along those lines as opposed to any sort of realistic possibility. I think if you look at it, Steven Stamkos is probably going to cost, what do we think, $10.5 million, $11 million for somebody, right?
Yeah.
How many points do we think maybe in a really good year next year he gets? 85, 90 points, 95 points in a great year kind of thing. So, $10.5 million for 95 points for your number one center. Or Connor McDavid stays healthy and gets you 75 to 85 and costs you $3 million. Like, they don't need a $10 million center. They have a number one center who is going to come close to competing with Stamkos for points. That costs them way, way, way less. Makes zero sense at all, to me anyways.
Wholeheartedly agree. But a lot of people like, come on, they got to go after him. And I'm like, Oilers don't need more money in forwards. The Oilers need defense. They've got enough.
They need to trade a center, not add one.
Yeah, like they've got enough scoring. We're seeing that. That's what I was trying to point out to people. It's defense they've got to go after, and they're going to have to dangle. Because, look, they've got forwards out, and they're still, like Eberle was out for a month. McDavid's been out. It's going to be out for 30 games. Yakupov, Pouliot, go down the list of guys being hurt, and they're still up there in offense in the NHL, which is great. That's a great sign. That means that's their position of strength. They're going to have to dangle the right piece to hopefully augment their blue line. I don't expect them to get a number one defenseman. I expect them to get – oh, hey, Shark, trust me. I'm totally in agreement. The people who think you're going to run three centermen, I love when they try to pull out the Jordan Staal Pittsburgh example, and I'm like, okay, so you want to pay Ryan Nugent-Hopkins $6 million to kill penalties and have 40 points? Yeah, because that's what Jordan Staal was in Pittsburgh, okay? That's what he was. He was not this offensive guy. He's a big, strong body who played more of a defensive role, had a great rookie year, 29 goals. It was out of his mind, goal scoring, never came close to that. So, and by the way, while he played 19 minutes in the playoffs, Crosby and Malkin played 24. Their top three centers played the most. They didn't run three lines. They ran seven forwards.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I think for those who suggest that you know, when we're talking about Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, that he should be here long-term, I'm not saying it's a terrible idea, and I'm not saying it's not going to happen, but I think more likely than running one, two, three down the middle is somebody ends up playing the wing. Drysdale has shown he can play the wing. Maybe Nugent-Hopkins gets an opportunity. Maybe he ends up on the wing, but I don't know that you go one, two, three, McDavid, Drysdale, Nugent-Hopkins as centers. You just can't spread the ice time around, and frankly, they're not the right type of players. If you had Brandon Sutter as your third-line center, that would make way more sense. He's that player, that third-line center that Jarrett Stoll in his earlier days, right? That's what they would need, and that's a little bit more of what Jordan Staal was, although he was a threat to score goals for a few years there. So, listen, you're not trading this player just for any defenseman. Well, they need a better defenseman, so find out who the best defenseman you get is and make that trade and bring him in and hope it's enough. No. You don't trade Nugent Hopkins for that deal. You trade him for somebody where you're going, that's absolutely the right defenseman. That absolutely makes sense. And without question, you can't deny how much better their blue line is now that that trade is done. They've basically taken from a position of major strength and shifted some of that strength and that money to the blue line. And now they've got a better blue line and they've still got lots of weapons up front. That's the whole fundamental behind a deal like this. And there aren't many defensemen in the world that are that would be available that would be a fit. You can run them all down, but there's maybe one or two who potentially could be moved that are a fit. One of them is Seth Jones. The other one's Tyson Barry. I don't know that the list is much longer than that.
Well, Tyson Barry straight up for you. They'd have to get more than that, in my opinion. I like him, but a small defenseman, yes, he produces points. There's no doubt about it. But the Oilers need big defenders. They've got Klefbom and Nurse, so sure, you could use him. But Barry, I don't want to pay Barry $6 million on my back end, but that's just me.
For sure. And you know, does he turn into Mike Green, right? Mike Green went into a tank for quite a while there after he got big money and was a strictly offensive defenseman, but they couldn't play him in their top couple of pairings. So you have to be careful about that when you're dealing with smaller offensive defensemen.
Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. What do you make of the Ryan Johansson situation?
Yeah, well, I mean, hey, look at the coach, right? Like, did you think things were going to be perfectly smooth when he rolled in there? That's a coach who's going to have this sort of thing happen. That's a coach who is – I just don't see John Tortorella as a guy who – at the end of the day, can say, I did everything I possibly could behind the scenes not to embarrass this player. I did everything I possibly could behind the scenes to avoid having to do this. I see John Tortorella as a guy who, you know, probably doesn't communicate as much as he should and then absolutely clobbers guys with stuff like this. And it's more of a hard line way of doing business. And I can't pretend to know everything that's gone on with Ryan Johansson. I do know Ryan Johansson is a heck of a good NHL centerman. And for whatever reason, he's had an up-and-down career, and the consistency hasn't been there. They're taking a iron-firm approach with him, trying to beat it into him. And I don't know that that's going to work with this player. It wouldn't surprise me one bit if the agent steps in and says, yeah, get him out of here.
Yeah, you just wonder kind of about, you know, the attitude issue. And I get it from Columbus's position that now they're clearly a position of weakness to deal with him. He's got 1 year left in his contract. But, you know, here's a player who had one really good year, Ryan, has been inconsistent in the other ones.
Yeah, for sure. And that's a problem. It is inconsistency. And we've heard conditioning is an issue. We've heard a lot of those things are an issue. But, I mean, you know, Columbus is a place where it's not like there have been a lot of really good offensive forwards for him to learn from, where there have been a lot of veteran guys who have been asked to put up points in the league who, you know, like he's kind of had to be the guy there for the last couple of seasons. And the consistency isn't there. And maybe he's just not the guy to lead the charge. Maybe he needs better pieces around him. I don't know. I mean, I dealt with him a little bit at the World Junior Hockey Championships. I know what a talent he is. He seems like a decent kid, but it's not going well for him. I just don't know that John Tortorella is going to be the answer to Ryan Johansson. I can't see that getting all sorted out, and boy, Torts really turned it around with him. I see more a parting of the ways before I see, settling in and figuring this one out between the two of them.
Yeah, I'll be curious to why. You mentioned how he didn't have any veterans to really learn from, similar to Taylor Hall, and just look at the two different players drafted in the exact same year.
Yep.
All right.
Yep, for sure.
So, Shagar, we will watch with interest tonight the Oilers and the Hawks. It's always an entertaining game, to say the least. Well, usually anyway, between these two teams. Should be fun to see how Cam Talbot plays, how the Oilers play. And Oscar Klefbom, a quick prediction. Do you think he plays on Monday, or do they wait and then have him back on Boxing Day?
Yeah, tough to say. I mean, I'm not on the road, not hearing what the coach, and I'm not sure. I think maybe they play it safe and give him a little bit of time, especially if Nikitin is okay still. If Nikitin's not killing him, then maybe they let him take a little bit more time to make sure.
I would agree. An extra week of rest will be a big difference. Shagar, yeah. We will chat with you tomorrow. Have a good one.
All right, take care, pal.